Welcome to the Jacksonville First Seventh-day Adventist Church podcast, where we listen, learn, and love together. Our speaker today is Pastor Jonathan Pinato.
And so what is a phonograph? Now, I had to do a little bit of research on this. I kind of was familiar with what a phonograph was, but I had to do a little bit more research about this, and I learned that a phonograph was the very first invention that was able to record and to play sound. Now this is very powerful here, because before the invention of the phonograph, there was no such thing as recorded sound. If you wanted to listen to music, you actually physically live either had to produce it yourself, either by singing or playing an instrument, or you had to go somewhere to listen to somebody sing or play an instrument. And that's why back in those days, concert halls and music halls were very popular. Why? Because that was one of the only places that you could go to listen to music. If there was any kind of parade or celebration in town, there would be music, because that was an opportunity for people to hear music, the only opportunity they had to hear music. And that's why also church played a pivotal role back in the days, because it was in church. One of the things that we do in church is that we sing and we have music in church. And so people would come to church to hear the music, because they didn't have an opportunity to hear music any other way. In fact, some of you remember the old evangelistic series. I think sometimes we still do evangelistic series like this. And before the speaker gets up to preach, we have a singing evangelist to sing. That was kind of the thing that we used to do to attract people to come. Now, the difference is today we have music everywhere, and we can listen to music anywhere we want to. We can listen to music however many times we want to. We can just put the repeat button and music will be going on and on and on again. We can also hear music from all over the world, international music. We're not just limited to our local music. So today music has proliferated, but at the turn of the 20th century, the only way to listen to music was live music, until the invention of the phonograph. Now, I thought this was something very powerful, especially what the Bible says about these kinds of things, but because the phonograph was a literal, physical, analog recording of sound. Did you guys catch that? All right, this is how the phonograph worked. Someone would speak it wasn't even a microphone, it was like a funnel. They would speak into the funnel. And inside the funnel, there was a little membrane that would vibrate. So you would speak, and it's speech or sound is carried through the air by sound waves. And that's actually something they didn't know back in those days. Now we know it. So you would speak into this membrane, and that little membrane would vibrate. And as that membrane would vibrate, then there was a stylus that was put on this wax cylinder, and as the vibrations inside the phonograph would vibrate, that stylus would also vibrate as well. In other words, literally, physically capturing that sound. Does that sound amazing to you? I mean, that sounds amazing to me. It's similar to how your eardrum works. You hear the sound of my voice. Inside your ears is a little eardrum that's vibrating, and then that eardrum then translates those vibrations into small electrical impulses that are then sent to the brain, and then the brain translates exactly what you're hearing. It's powerful. It's amazing that Thomas Edison was able to come up with this invention, not only to record sound, but then to play back that sound. The word phonograph, or gramophones as they were called, literally means written sound. Written sound. Oh, that's just amazing. But I have to move on. But this little part, I could just stay on this little part. Just my mind blows. You know how the Bible says that God records everything? There's a record of everything. And considering how technology has progressed, first it was a literal recording. Then we moved from gramophones to vinyl records. Do you remember those? I remember those. And then from vinyl records, we moved to audio cassettes. From audio cassettes, we moved to CDs. From CDs, we've moved to digital music. And who knows what the future has. But the Bible says that God records everything. And now we are at the point with technology that we can probably do something very similar to that. But let's move on. But let's move on from this point. So let's go back. Let's go back to the year. By the way, if you don't know what you're looking at here, this little blue wax cylinder is where the music was recorded on. That was the actual record right there with the etched music on it, and this was the cylindrical phonograph. But let's go back now to the year 1908. And we will be traveling, what year did I say? 1908. Anybody was alive back in those days? So, no, but did you know someone who was alive back in those days? Did anyone here know someone who had been alive at least 1908? Let's go back to the year 1908. And we will now be traveling. If you notice, our starting point here on the map is Jacksonville First Seventh-day Adventist Church. So put your walking shoes on. Put your walking shoes on. 1908, we will be traveling to the community of Mirage Flats, Nebraska. Has anyone ever been to Nebraska here? Anybody ever been to Nebraska? I was born in Lincoln, Nebraska. We're going to take a trip to Nebraska. There is nothing in Nebraska. There was nothing in Nebraska in 1908, and there still is nothing in Nebraska in 2019. It is the rolling plains that just go on forever and ever and ever. And so we're going to be traveling to this little community on the northwest of Nebraska, just south of the Dakotas, just south of the Black Hills where Mount Rushmore is. And so back in 1908, there was free land that was offered to anyone willing to develop that land. And so they would build sod homes. Do you remember this from American history? They would build sod homes, mud homes on the side of those rolling plains, and that is where they would live. There was no electricity. There was no running water. They had to have wells, and they had to just live off of what they grew. Now, if you visit Nebraska in the wintertime, this is what Nebraska looks like. In winter, Nebraska is cut off from the rest of civilization. And so our story takes place in the month of December 1908. And we will now be introduced to the Sandoff family. What family did I say? The Sandoff family. Good, you're paying attention. I remember it all quite clearly. The night was very cold, and I heard footsteps squeaking outside in the snow, that crunching, packing sound that you hear when somebody walks on fresh snow. The roads in the region had been practically unbroken for 2 whole weeks, but now that the holidays were approaching, wagons had pushed out the long miles to the railroad, and you could see the men would be scooping up a trail, shoveling snow for each other through the deep rifts. My brothers and I, we had been asleep in our attic bed when there was this shouting in front, out by the house, by the road, then running steps, and then the sound of a broom thumping against the ceiling below us, and it was Father booming, get up, the phonograph is here, get up, the phonograph. We quickly jumped out of our beds and we slipped downstairs, and there with the front door wide open, we could see the back of the loaded wagon. 3 neighbors were easing boxes off of it, and our father was limping back and forth, shouting, "Don't break me, mein records!" Inside the house, mother was poking sticks of wood into the firebox of the cook stove, and her eyes met with mine, and there was a shining in her eyes. But there was also a concern about the extravagance of a talking machine. And she would say, "Then what we needed were our shoes to help with our chilblains." Chilblains, chilburns. We don't know anything about that here in Florida, but chilburns are when your skin is exposed to the cold weather, and then it's not quite frostbite, but your skin burns, and it turns red, and it even swells. And mother was saying, "Then what we needed were our shoes to help with our chilblains, but your father has apparently forgotten about that." The men placed the 3 large boxes in the kitchen living room floor, and my father took his crowbar and he began opening them. And first, there was the machine. It was varnished oaked with a shining cylinder for the records. And then the horn. And then a great black gilt-ribbed morning glory. And the crazy wrought arm and chain to hold it in place. By now, a wagon full of young people from our Dutch community, they had turned into our yard. I'd say there were about 15 youth piling at the front door, waiting to come in, anxious to see this new technology set up and working. My brothers and I, we had eagerly seen my father exposing a tight packing of round paper containers, a little smaller than a can of baking powder. Father read the instructions in his German-accented English. He slipped the brown wax cylinder on the machine. He cranked the handle carefully, and he set the needle down. And everybody waited, and they leaned forward, and we heard a rhythmic frying in the silence, a whispering sound, soft and very, very far away. Did you hear that? Have you heard that sound before? For that split second, it brought a murmur of disappointment and an escaping laugh. But you have to understand, this was the very first time any of them had ever heard a phonograph. Recorded sound was something completely new and foreign to them. They didn't know what to expect, but just a few seconds later, we heard a voice and then the music. Does anyone know what that song is? Franz Schubert's Serenade. What's amazing is that these recordings from back in those days are still available on YouTube. It's incredible. We are actually hearing what they heard in those days. Did you hear that? It still seems to me the most beautiful music in the world. By now, all six of us of our family and the 15 of the youth, we clustered around the phonograph. We were wanting to reach out and to touch it, and Father saw it, and he said, "Nein," no, in German, "Nein," said Father. I looked over to my mother, and while, yes, she was hesitant about the purchase, yet as the music played, there was a light in her eyes. There was a hunger for music. You see, Mother came from Switzerland, the country of music, and Mother told me of how she had attended the Zurich Opera House and the Vienna Opera House as a girl, and about the wonderful music she had heard once, but now she's here in northwestern Nebraska on a government claim, living in the middle of nowhere, no electricity, living in a mud home, a sod home, a dirt home. True, we sang the old country songs in the evenings, and she would lead us, and she taught us every song that she knew, but plainly it had not been enough. Really, it was nothing. By now, everyone had pushed up against the boxes to see the different cylindrical records there were to play, and I had especially been privileged and chosen by my father to run the machine, to crank the handle, and to play the two-minute records set before me. I was the keeper of the phonograph. In modern terms, I had become the DJ. There were violin pieces for my father, among them Spring Song. Then there was The Mockingbird. Let me see if you hear it. There was Blue Danube. And there was Schumann's Tromerei. With the trail broken to the main bridge just below our house, and with Christmas Eve just around the corner, there was considerable travel on the road. And with our newfound fame in the community, thanks to the phonograph, our little sod house, with its light and with its warmth and with its music, became a gathering place for the community and for all who passed by. mother was busily handing out cups of hot chocolate and coffee and tin baked coffee cake, tin baked because it was literally baked in tin. And by now the phonograph had been moved out of the kitchen living room into my parents' bedroom on top of their dresser. And the boxes of records were being placed wherever there was space. Now, you have to realize that our house was very small. Our house was only a two-bedroom house. It had the kitchen, living room, one space, and then there was a doorway, no door, just a curtain hanging down there into my parents' bedroom. And then above was the attic where we and the children, we slept. And the bathroom was, oh, you guys know, and it really wasn't a bathroom. It was an outhouse. With the music and the guests and the serving and the preparations and the hosting and the cleanup, mother hadn't had a chance to notice how many records my father had purchased. But she became suspicious when record after record kept playing, each one new and different. And then while the Edison Military Band played,
played by the Edison Military Band.
While the Edison Military Band played, she had the opportunity to peek into the room. And there she saw all the records spread out in the bedroom. And she said, "Jules," she asked my father, "how many records did you buy?" Now, life hasn't changed much since 1908, has it? Anyone who is married, couples, can I get a witness? When we purchase something our spouse disapproves of, and then they're looking at the credit card statement and they see an amount or they see something there and then they ask about it, we try to hide it. We try to minimize it, not necessarily bad, right? But just something that we really wanted. We hide it, we minimize it, we deflect, we try to change the subject, we give ambiguous answers. And so in response to my mother's question about how many records he had purchased, my father said, "Drei." Drei. Drei is three in German. Drei. And there came a pause. Drei. 300. 300. 300, said my mother. 300. It looks more like 3,000. 3,000. She angrily said to my father. He responded, "I added to the order." Now, he didn't say exactly how much he had added to the order, but in addition to the Edison records, there were several hundred foreign recordings obtained through a Swiss friend of his from New York City, and at a very stiff price. Mother looked at him, her blue eyes as tragic as she could make them, and she began to accuse father bitterly. "You paid nothing on the mortgage. Our children need over shoes to keep warm and protect them from chill burns. You wasted it, all of the inheritance money you received, all 2,100 on the talking machine. You forgot about everything except your stamp collection, your guns, and the phonograph. Debts, and more debts." Did you guys catch that? I think we would understand that in any language. But before she could add to this, a young Swiss by the name of Paul Fry grabbed her and against the stubbornness of her feet, whirled her back into the kitchen in the gallop of the Edison band. And he raced mother from the door and to the stove and back again, and round and round and round she went, her skirt flying out. And believe it or not, the anger died from her face. And there was a shining in her eyes and with this excitement that I had never seen be in them before. And I now realize, looking back, all the fun that my mother had missed in her working life. All the fun she had missed out in her childhood in the old country and during the much harder years later. The gallop started, the dancing, and hastily the kitchen table was pushed against the wall, and we had waltzes, and we had two-steps, and we had quadrilles, and we had shah-de-shahs and bohemian polkas, and square dancing, and one, and two, and one, and two, and I'm an Adventist, so I don't know what I'm doing here, but we just let ourselves go. Now, I just want to back it up here if you're wondering about how much this phonograph cost and about its records. I just want to take a little time to do a little bit of math. In 1908, that phonograph cost $125. In 2019 money, that would be translated to $3,378.38. How many of you plan to spend $3,378 on a Christmas gift this Christmas? You don't have to say. How many of you, amen? How many of you plan to give a gift to Jesus of that amount during this month? We will welcome it. The Magi brought gold and incense and myrrh to Jesus, and silver we'll receive it too. Wax cylinders, just keep these numbers in mind. Wax cylinders, they varied in range. That, you know, there's different qualities. Some wax cylinders records started at 16 cents, 19, but on average, they cost 50 cents back then, and the really, really expensive ones cost $4. In our money, 50 cents in our day today would be $13.51. $4 in 1908 would be $108.11. That's coming from a time when average wages were 22 cents an hour. Do this here, 22 cents an hour. $1.76 for a day's labor, $8.80 a week, $35.20 a month, $422 a year is what they would earn. And so if we do the math, we're not exactly sure how many records he had, because he was ambiguous about the answer, but we know at least 300, and then we heard the son say, and a few hundred more, foreign ones at a stiff price. So I kind of just did the math. I said, well, 500 records. And so that means that he spent nearly $1,000 on the records. How much did that phonograph cost him? $125? And then he spent $1,000 on records. That's $1,000 in 1908 money. 2019 money, that would be $27,027.03. Do you remember how much the inheritance was? $2,100. 2019 money, that's $56,000. And how much did he, and the wife said that he spent the majority of the inheritance money on this talking machine. Women, well, what do you think about that? The music continued nonstop for a couple days, and visitors mainly came in the afternoon and evening once the work on the farm had ended. Mother worked tirelessly hosting the visitors. The second evening, we had 22 seated at the table for dinner. The children would take turns sleeping upstairs in the attic, faintly hearing the music and the dancing downstairs, while one of the siblings continually kept the phonograph playing, cranking it, and changing out the cylinder records. The phonograph had completely absorbed our attention, so much so that I almost forgot about hunting for a Christmas tree and cutting it down. Even though we were poor, Christmas had become a time for a tree, even without presents. It was a tree and singing. That's what Christmas was about, with at least one new song that we would like to learn. But as I went to ask a dad to come along to find this tree, Dad was exhausted. He was taking a nap from all the late nights listening to the phonograph. In the afternoon, a Syrian peddler pulled into our yard. We called him Solomon, and he had a four-horse drawn wagon. Seeing the crowds gathered at our house, Solomon stopped to see if he could interest anyone in his wares. And when he heard the music and found out about the phonograph, he was the first to express what others must have thought. "Excuse it, please, Mrs. Sandow, but it seemed to uneducated man like me the new music is for fine palace." Now, Father heard him, and before Mother could answer, he roared back, "Nein, nothing's too good for my family and my neighbors." "But the children have frozen feet," replied Solomon. "Frozen feet heal, but what you put in the mind lasts forever." Now, it's true, we had always been money poor, and plainly we would go on so, but there was plenty of meat, and there was plenty of game, and there was plenty of everything that the garden and the orchard and the field and the open field could provide. And for all of which, unfortunately, there was no market in town. Our bread, it was dark and it was heavy, and it was from our macaroni wheat ground at a local water mill. The cellar was full of our own potatoes. We had barrels of pickles and sauerkraut and hundreds of jars of canned fruit and vegetables, crocks of jams and jellies, both wild and tame. Most of the root crops were in a long pit outside, and the attic was strung with little sacks of herbs and poly seeds. We had bigger sacks with dried green beans, sweet corn, and wild plums. Piled along the low sides of the attic were the bushels of popcorn, peas, beans, and lentils. And the flour was stacked in rows, between which was space for the mousing cat. The only thing we purchased were sugar, coffee, and chocolate, perhaps with a barrel of blackstrap molasses for cookies and brown cake. It wasn't until the second day, pushing into the third day, that Mother finally had a chance to rest. She climbed upstairs into the attic, and off to bed she went. It was her first nap since the records came. Downstairs, the music continued. The table and the floor were once again cleared. The parties of young and old continued to pour in. And Father, like the rest of us, he was red-eyed, but it didn't keep him from soaking up all the praises and all the respect from everyone who came in. By this time, we had given up hope that we could go out and cut down our Christmas tree. And just as that, A big boy came up from up the river. He came running riding into our yard, dragging a pine behind his horse. It was a small tree, but it was shapely, and we could fit it right in front of the window. The only thing, though, was that this youth, he was the son of Father's worst enemy. It was the man who had testified in court that Jules Sandow, that's my pops, that Jules Sandow had shot at him. And he got our father 30 days in jail. Although everyone knew that my dad was a crack shot and whatever he fired at made no further appearances. But as the son came in the house with the tree, someone announced loudly who he was. And I saw Father look towards his Winchester up on the wall, but he was not the kind to quarrel with an enemy's son. But then he was told that the boy's father himself was in the yard, and so now my dad paled above his beard. He paled so bad that the dancers stopped, and for the very first time, the room went silent. Helpless, I saw my dad jump up to get his rifle, but then he turned and looked at the pale-faced, his gaunt-faced young son, and he said, "Tell your father to come in. We've got some good Austrian music." And so the man came in, and sheepishly, and he hunched over near the door and took a seat. And Father left the room briefly, but came back out, and he said hi to the man. And my neighbor, Mrs. Serber, thanked the man for bringing the tree and offered him a cup of coffee and some fry cakes. And he then went on to compliment my mother about how good of a cook she was and that she was a fine woman. And he stayed for a while. He enjoyed the music. And he left as another group was coming in. As he left, Father's friends, they breathed a sigh of relief. "Sandow," one of them said, "you could have shot him down on your own place and not got a day in the pen for it." My pops replied, "I got no use for his outfit, but the music is for everybody." And so the music and the dancing continued. Christmas came and went. Holiday week was much like Christmas. The house was full of visitors as the news of the fine music spread. Get this, believe it or not, people came from 50 to 60 miles away and even further, for there was no other collection of records in all of northwestern Nebraska, and none with such an open door as ours. There was something for everybody. For the Irishmen, for the Scots, for the Swedes, the Danes, the Poles, the Czechs, as well as the Germans and the rest. But believe it or not, the greatest amount of variety was from the Americans. One settler, he was a GAR veteran. GAR is an acronym, I believe, that stands for the Grand Army of the Republic. I think that's the official term that they used for the Union soldiers during the Civil War. A GAR veteran, he burst into tears and he fled from the house at the sound of the first notes of Tenteen Tonight. Perhaps it was the memories that it awakened. And many Americans, to our surprise, were as interested in classical music as any European. And it wasn't always a matter of cultivated taste either, as there was this one illiterate little woman from down the river. She cried with joy at Rubinstein's Melody in F. she said. I had heard me talking and singing before, as she wiped her eyes, but I wasn't knowing there could be something sweet as that come from a horn. Finally, it was the new year, and that was the day that the Sandal relatives and siblings and uncles and cousins, they all gathered, perhaps 20 of them immigrants brought to America by my father. But this year, they were only a sort of an eddy in the regular stream of outsiders. Instead of the nostalgic jokes and the talk of the family and of the old country, there were records to be heard, particularly the foreign ones and the melodies of the old violin lessons that the brothers had taken and the guitar and the mandolin of their sister. Now, my father, he had to endure a certain amount of joking over the way he spent most of his inheritance. One of the brothers was building a cement block home in place of his sod house, and also a greenhouse with his inheritance money. The sister was to have a fine, large barn built instead of a new house because her husband believed that the next year, Halley's Comet would bring the end of the world. Ferdinand, the youngest of the brothers, he had put his inheritance money into Wildcat oil stock, and he planned to become very wealthy. The following morning, they left, and a good thing, too. My mother told me that she had used up the last of the chocolate, the last cake of the 25-pound caddies. We had baked up 2 sacks of flour, 49 pounds each. 3/4 of a 100-pound bag of coffee had been roasted, ground, and used during the week. The floor of the kitchen living room, old and worn anyway, was much thinner for the week of dancing. New Year's night, there was a man who had been there every day all week. Don't be that guy. There had been a man there who had been there every day all week, leaned back onto one of the kitchen chairs, and he fell backwards, and he went clear through the floor. Ah, the fools, Father shouted, had to wear out my floor dancing. But plainly, he was pleased. It was a fine story to tell for years, the story of the phonograph records. And he was particularly gratified by the praise of those who knew something about music. People like the Serbers, our neighbors, and a visitor from the Czech community, a relative of the great composer Dovrak. The man wrote an item for the paper saying, this Jules Sandal has not only settled a good community of home settlers, but is enriching their cultural life with the greatest music in the world. Probably wants to borrow money from you, mother said. He has come to the wrong house. Gradually, the records for special occasions and for visitors were stored on the porch. But for those who were used regularly, Father had built made flat boxes to fit under the beds and a cabinet in the corner at the bedroom door. The best and the finest from both the Edison and the foreign recordings were put into this cabinet with a door that didn't stay long. Winter passed, spring came and went, and on one warmish summer day, when I was left alone with the smaller children, the water pail needed refilling. I ran out to draw a bucket from the well. It was hard and heavy pool, and I hated it. I was always afraid that I wouldn't last and would have to let the rope slip and break the windlass. Well, somehow, in my uneasy hurry, I left the front door ajar. The wind blew it back, and when I had the bucket started up the 65-foot well, our big old sow, loose in the yard, pushed her way into the house. Horrified, I shouted out to my little brother, get out of her way, Fritz, get out of her way. But I had to keep pulling and huffing and until the bucket was at the top. And I ran and I scattered the cylinders all over the floor. And this pig, the sow, was standing among them as corn, chomping down on them, on the wax records that had rolled out, boxes and all, eating some. Furiously, I thrashed her out with the broom amidst the squealing and the shouts. I tried to save what I could, but it was too late. The sow had broken at least 30 or 35 of the best records and had eaten all or part of more than 20 others. They were gone. Brahms was gone. Beethoven was gone. Moonlight Sonata, Mozart, gone. Foreign and domestic, gone. And many, many others, all gone. I got the worst whipping of my life for that carelessness. But the loss of the records hurt more and for much, much longer.
This podcast is brought to you by the Jacksonville First Seventh-day Adventist Church. Connect with us on www.jaxsda.org or on Facebook and YouTube. We look forward to sharing more inspiring messages with you.